Hello and welcome to the Central Bank Project. Before I explain what this podcast will be about, I would like to introduce myself. My name is RJ. I'm a nurse by profession. My faith background is Christian, and I am a history nerd. So the Central Bank Project is going to be about several different things, focusing mainly on the central bank system of the world, such as the Bank of England, the Federal Reserve, the Bank of International Settlements. So it's going to feature the history of the Federal Reserve, how the design crash of 1907 led to the start of the Fed, how the Bank of England and other countries also have their central banks, with the Bank of England really being the blueprint for the rest of the world's central banks to follow. History of central banking in the U.S., anyway, really started in the colonies in 1764. I will also explore the role of gold and silver, how empires were built on them, how empires were sustained by them, and also how empires crumbled through debasing their gold and silver with worthless metals. And we will also explore and go all the way back to ancient Rome and how this led to the fall of Rome. We'll also talk about the differences between precious metals and fiat currency. We'll talk about what a free market, non-monopoly capitalist society looks like versus the controlled and manipulated one that the bankers have set up for us many centuries ago. I'll also talk about how the bankers created their corporate monopoly capitalism and the communist socialist system through politics. I'll explore the presidents who were murdered because they tried taking a stand against these bankers. Basically, anything bank-related and really what central banking touches. And I would also like to say, don't ever forget that you as the individual, myself, or anyone else are just a resource for these bankers. And unfortunately, at this time, we're all debt slaves. So who is this show for? Honestly, this show is for everybody. People who are interested, or maybe you don't even know that you're interested. Maybe you've never heard this before, because as far as I remember, in school, this is not really taught to the extent of what will be talked about in this podcast. So this project is for anyone who wants to learn why things are the way they are, why the debt can't be controlled, and why your paycheck seems to be shrinking in terms of buying power. I really do hope that you, as a person, have multiple streams of income. Maybe you have a decent career where you do have a nice salary to help yourself and your family. So really, this show is for anyone who wants to educate themselves on the history of central banking, or maybe you're just a history nerd in general and you want to learn and have never heard this before. So for now, I believe this show will be done bi-weekly and on Saturdays. This episode today will just be a quick introduction to the Central Bank Project focusing on the Federal Reserve system. Needless to say, it is not possible to talk about the Federal Reserve in one short episode, but hopefully this will at least have the motor started and we'll continue to fuel this and we'll continue to drive down the road in this and explore this complex but very important subject. We'll talk about what the Central Bank of the United States is, the Federal Reserve System, and we'll talk about what it is not.
The Federal Reserve System is a strange creature. It's easier to say what it is not than what it is. Most people think it's a government agency. It is not. Those who have studied it say, well, wait a minute, this is a private banking corporation. You almost get half credit for that, but it's not really a private corporation either. It's a hybrid. And to make it more complicated, we can say it is a cartel. This is the amazing thing. The Federal Reserve System is a banking cartel. It's no different than a banana cartel or an oil cartel or the sugar cartel. It just happens to be a banking cartel. It's a group of very large and powerful private banking interests who have gotten together in a cartel arrangement, and they brought the federal government into it as a partner in order to use the force of law to enforce the cartel agreement. You see, with most cartels, if a member of the cartel wants to break out or violate the agreement, if they fixed prices, for example, and one of the members of the cartel wants to raise the prices contrary to the agreement, There's no way for them to discipline the member of the cartel and force him to stick with the agreements. But if you bring the government into the arrangement and convert the agreement into law, now all members are required by law to keep the agreement or they go to jail. So this is why cartels always, throughout history, have always tried to form a partnership with the government, whatever government is in the locale where they operate. And so we come to the amazing conclusion that the Federal Reserve System is basically a cartel, a banking cartel, that has gone into partnership with the federal government of the United States so that the federal laws can be used to enforce the cartel agreement.
The problem is that since 1864, we've had a debt-based banking system. All our money is based on government debt. We cannot extinguish government debt without extinguishing our money supply. That's why talk of paying off the national debt without reforming our banking system is an impossibility. That's why the solution does not lie in discussing the size of the national debt, rather it lies in reforming our banking system.
The Federal Reserve was created during a secret meeting off the coast of Georgia on Jekyll Island. A banking monopoly, or as some people like to refer to it as the cartel, was formed to shield its members from competition. And a plan, a very intelligent plan, was devised to persuade Congress and the general public that the cartel was a government institution. So what is the Federal Reserve System? The answer may surprise you, but there are no reserves and it is not federal. Furthermore, the Federal Reserve banks are not actually banks. The hybrid private central bank that has owned and operated the United States government since 1913 is the Federal Reserve System. All right, we're going to start in 1907. The planned crash of 1907 needed to happen so the next central bank, the Federal Reserve, would be set up. There were a number of banks who had reserves at this time of less than 1% thanks to fractional reserve lending. After a few days, they called in the bank runs, and they were happening, and J.P. Morgan was going to step in and save the day. In other words, the people who caused the panic also saved the day. Eventually, by 1908, the crash was over.
First of all, the market share of the big national banks was shrinking fast. In the first 10 years of the century, the number of U.S. banks had more than doubled to over 20,000. By 1913, only 29% of all banks were national banks, and they held only 57% of all deposits, as Senator Aldrich later admitted in a magazine article.
Before passage of this act, the New York bankers could only dominate the reserves of New York. Now, we are able to dominate the bank reserves of the entire country.
Secondly, the nation's economy was so strong that corporations were starting to finance their expansions out of profits instead of taking out huge loans from large banks. In the first 10 years of the new century, 70% of corporate funding came from profits. In other words, American industry was becoming independent of the money changers, and that trend had to be stopped.
Moving on to 1910, 3 years before the Federal Reserve was actually created, some of the most powerful men in the U.S., the bankers and politicians, left for Jekyll Island off the coast of Georgia on November 22, 1910. They left the island 9 days later. The goal was simple and in theory, but would have to be done through Congress, and that was to plan the takeover of the U.S. government, sealing the fate of future generations who would be sold to the banks as debt slaves. December 23, 1913 saw the passage of the Federal Reserve Act. Their goal was to deceive the American public into thinking that this legislation would avert bank takeovers, avert recessions, and even hold off depressions. The reality is far more straightforward. It was intended to be a profitable corporate monopoly for the bankers here at home and abroad.
So just as they'd done so frequently before, the money changers decided it was time to crash the American economy. The Federal Reserve began flooding the country with money. They increased the money supply by 62% during these years. Money was plentiful. This is why it was known as the Roaring Twenties. It is not a coincidence that the biographies of all the Wall Street giants of that era, John D. Rockefeller, J.P. Morgan, Bernard Baruch, etc., all marvel that they got out of the stock market just before the crash and put all their assets in cash or gold. On October 24th, 1929, the big New York bankers called in their 24-hour broker call loans. This meant that both stockbrokers and customers had to dump their stocks on the market to cover their loans, no matter what price they had to sell them for. As a result, the market tumbled, and that day was known as Black Thursday.
1929 to 1933. And we all know what this is. The question is, do you know why and why it needed to happen? There were many warnings about the international bankers and the bankers here at home from men such as President Teddy Roosevelt, Charles Lindbergh, Louis McFadden, and the mayor of New York, John Hyland, as well as others. Why were these warnings not heeded by the American people? Simple, because the 1920s were known as the Roaring Twenties, because the amount of gold the U.S. had amassed from England during World War I, and at this time bank loans were profitable and plentiful, and the businesses were profitable. Income taxes were cut, and tariffs on imports were raised. The economy continued to grow despite taking on debt from World War I. The bankers, both here at home and abroad, would not stand for this, and they needed this growth to stop, so they did what they do best. Leading to the Depression. Paul Warburg warned his closest associates about what was going to happen, the impending crash and the soon depression, well in advance during the month of March 1929. The Federal Reserve started to constrain the money supply in August 1929. Here's a quote. It was not accidental. It was a carefully contrived occurrence. The international bankers sought to bring about a condition of despair here so that they might emerge as rulers of us all. Louis T. McFadden. The Federal Reserve definitely caused the Great Depression by contracting the amount of currency in circulation by one-third from 1929 to 1933. That is, of course, Milton Friedman, the popular Nobel Prize-winning economist. He was definitely no dummy. FDR forbade the private ownership of gold in 1933, with the exception of rare coins. What happened to the billions lost during the Depression? Did it just vanish? Well, no. Some of it changed hands, while some of it went overseas to help rebuild Germany after World War I. What was left in the pockets of those who had gotten out just before the crash had happened? They purchased gold, because gold is the place to put your money when a depression happens. The depression will be looked at in further episodes and really can be its own series with many episodes. At this time, when the gold had all been turned in, because the people would have been fined $10,000 if not, and the price set at $35 an ounce, foreigners were the only ones who could sell their gold at the current time. The foreigners who left the stock market before the crash had bought gold at $20 an ounce. They shipped the gold back from England to here, to the U.S., and sold it, almost doubling their profit. FDR fooled the American people into thinking that by giving up their gold to the government. That's what the people really believed. They were helping to rebuild and stimulate the economy. This is patriotism, or the false belief of. Fort Knox was completed in 1936. By January of 1937, the gold that the government had illegally stolen from the people was moved here by railcar.
So unpopular was the confiscation order that no one anywhere in government would take credit for authoring it. No congressman claimed it. At the signing ceremony, President Roosevelt made it clear to all present that he was not the author of it and publicly stated that he had not ever read it. Even his Secretary of the Treasury said he'd never read it either, saying it was, quote, what the experts wanted.
1953. President Eisenhower ordered an audit of Fort Knox.
Where did America's gold in Fort Knox go? Over the years, it was sold off to European money changers at the $35 per ounce price. Remember, this was during a time when it was illegal for Americans to buy any of their own gold from Fort Knox. In fact, there was a very infamous case where the Firestone family set up a string of dummy corporations to purchase Fort Knox gold and keep it in Switzerland, never hitting U.S. shores. They were eventually caught, however, and successfully prosecuted.
1971. So what happened to the gold that was in Fort Knox that rightfully belonged to the people? Simple. It was sold off to the international bankers in Europe. It was still illegal at this time for any American to buy gold. Then in 1971, President Nixon repealed FDR's Gold Confiscation Act, and almost a decade later, gold soared up to almost $900 an ounce.
So just how did the story of the Fort Knox gold robbery get out? It all started with an article in a New York periodical in 1974. The article charged that the Rockefeller family was manipulating the Federal Reserve to sell off Fort Knox gold at bargain basement prices to anonymous European speculators. 3 days later, the anonymous source of the story, Louise Auchincloss Boyer, mysteriously fell to her death from the window of her 10th floor apartment in New York. How would Mrs. Boyer have known of the Rockefeller connection to the Fort Knox gold heist? She was the longtime secretary of Nelson Rockefeller.
1982. President Reagan issued a gold commission to see if returning back to a gold standard would help decrease government spending. But the commission came back with the conclusion that the U.S. Treasury did not own any gold. This makes sense since it was siphoned off to the Federal Reserve System as collateral against the national debt.